Listen now to Scripture as I read it to you from the Gospel of Matthew, the 26th chapter, beginning at verse 57. Those who had arrested Jesus took him to Caiaphas, the high priest, in whose house the scribes and the elders had gathered. But Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and going inside, he sat with the guards in order to see how this would end. Now the chief priests and the whole council were looking for false testimony against Jesus so that they might put him to death, but they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last, two came forward and said, "This fellow said, 'I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.'" The high priest stood up and said, "Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you?" But Jesus was silent. Then the high priest said to him, "I put you under oath before the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "You have said so. But I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothes and said, "He has blasphemed. Why do we still need witnesses? You've heard his blasphemy. What is your verdict?" And they answered, "He deserves death." And they spat in his face and struck him. And some slapped him, saying, "Prophesy to us, you Messiah. Who is it that struck you?" The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We have a dog, Benson. He was rescued 18 months ago from a high kill shelter in South Carolina. He has, through his lovable, laid-back temperament, won a place in the hearts of our family. Literally, he is a 70-pound lap dog. He has, however, one major flaw. He overzealously protects our property and home. He growls and barks at any car or person who dares even enter our driveway. If someone attempts to enter our home, Benson adopts a completely different personality, barks and growls, and attempts to persuade the visitor to leave. Needless to say, we have been working on this behavior with a professional, and the good news is that we are making some progress. But first, we needed to understand what is going through Benson's head when he's confronted with a stranger on our property. Well, we learned that it presents a crisis to him. He feels threatened. His simple, comfortable world is about to change radically. At least he thinks it is. Another person will enter it. Will he be safe? Will he be sent to another home? Will the simple comforts of laying around the house with two retired folks end? It is, for him, a crisis. And this crisis invokes an emotion, fear. Now, he's a big dog. He's a strong dog. But that does not preclude fear. It is the fear of loss. Now, the primal fear all mammals, including us, human beings, a primal fear we all possess. He responds to his fear by barking, growling, and hoping that the threat will cower and disappear. And so our lovable, laid-back dog goes into hyper-vigilant watchdog mode. The story of Jesus before Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin is a narrative that follows the same threefold pattern of our dog, Benson. First, there's a crisis with a defined threat. The threat then triggers an emotion, fear. There's a response to that emotion. Do whatever you can to remove the threat. Let's look at the crisis. Jerusalem itself was in crisis. It was a cultural crisis. Judaism was in ferment. Different factions were jostling for authority and power. The Sadducees were the dominant group. They controlled the Sanhedrin, the official court of the Hebrew people, consisting of 70 men. In spite of this, they were beginning to experience a loss of influence to the other groups that were forming amongst the Hebrew people. Among those groups were the Pharisees. The Pharisees, who we read about in the New Testament, were devout Jews who focused their faith not on temple worship, but rather on the strict observance of the law of Moses. Theirs was a Judaism that did not require the temple. We remember that the Apostle Paul was originally a Pharisee. A second group were the Zealots. Today, they might be labeled as a terrorist organization, but their purpose was understandable: to free Jerusalem from foreign occupation. The Zealots carried a dagger, which they hid beneath their robes, much like the suicide bombing vests of their 21st century progeny. Simon, not Simon Peter, but Simon, one of the more obscure of the 12 disciples, was from this group. A third group were the Essenes. These were the social radicals who completely denounced everything that was associated with the temple cultus. They chose to live in the desert, believing that there in the wilderness the Messiah would appear. They were radically devoted to this hope, and they distinguished themselves by their devotion to the law of Moses. The Dead Sea Scrolls, which have become so valuable to modern biblical scholarship, were recorded by them. There's speculation by some that John the Baptist might have spent some time with the Essenes, and you will remember that he referred to the Sadducees and to the Pharisees as a brood of vipers. The Essenes were a challenge to those in power. And then, if that was not enough, there were a fourth group, the Herodians. These were the pragmatists. They believed that the future of the Hebrew faith, and indeed Jerusalem itself, was secured through ultimately accommodating their faith and their lifestyle to their Roman occupiers. Herod the Great, from whom they are named, was absolutely brilliant at this. He ruled for decades, by appeasing both the Roman authorities and also the Hebrew people. If there was a rebellion, whether it was started by an upstart Messiah, by one of the Essenes, by one of the Zealots, or by this Jesus, the temple might be closed, or worse, destroyed. And there would be no need for a high priest. Judaism would be forever changed. And so Caiaphas dwelt in his fears and was afraid. His fears were expressed in his comments, which are found in another gospel. In the Gospel of John, we read Caiaphas saying, "You don't understand. It's better for you to have one man die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed." Caiaphas was afraid. He could lose it all. And so he responded to his fear by arranging a phony trial before the Sanhedrin. And he held that trial not in their usual place, but at his own residence. Now there are 70 members of the Sanhedrin, so you can imagine what a residence he had. Well, the trial begins, and they immediately jettison the ninth commandment. Well, so much for piety. And they begin to look for false witnesses. And finally, after a brief interrogation of Jesus, Caiaphas exclaims, "Gotcha! We don't need any more witnesses. My mind is made up." The response was not merely a death sentence on the one before them. No. It was a death sentence on truth itself. The narrative of this phony trial is important. It's important for us to read today because ultimately it preserves the truth. We realize as we read it or as we hear it that it was not Jesus who was on trial before the Sanhedrin. No. It was Caiaphas and the other members of that court who are on trial before the record of history and ultimately before the divine. they were the guilty. And to quote the bard in The Merchant of Venice, ultimately, the truth will out. We, you and me, are in the midst of a crisis. But allow me to be so bold as to say that this is not merely a health crisis. Truth itself is in the dock. The COVID-19 pandemic that is sweeping across society is also revealing who we are. Our response at all levels will be judged by history itself and ultimately by the divine, just as Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin have been judged. The Quaker poet James Russell Lowell, responding to the annexation of Texas as a slave state, wrote a broadside which he entitled The Present Crisis. His familiar words ring true today. You know them. Once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide in the strife of truth and falsehood for the good or evil side. Some great cause, God's new Messiah, offering each the bloom of blight or blight, parts the goats upon the left hand and the sheep upon the right. And the choice goes by forever, twixt the darkness and the night and the light. We have witnessed the fearful responses, the hoarding of paper goods and food, the tanking of the stock market, and the anxiety that is coloring our relationships with one another. Like Caiaphas, we are experiencing a relatively comfortable existence under siege, and we are fearful. Let me be frank, I am fearful. I have my fears, and I will own them. But we are also witnessing the response to our fears. Once again, it's happening at all levels. Truth has become the first victim of this pandemic. Friends and neighbors and family members have said it's a hoax. The snake oil sellers have hawked their magic cure-alls, some with deadly results. And just this week, we have heard the words of Caiaphas, better to have one die than a whole nation. We've heard those words from the mouths of power, that it might be better for some to die, the elderly and the weak from this pandemic, than to lose the entire economy. Enough. Those are the responses that are engendered by fear. Fear of losing what we have. Fear of change. Fear that muzzles truth. Fear that dehumanizes. Fear that devalues human life. Human life that was created in the very image of the divine. Lowell concluded his poem with these words. New occasions teach new duties. Time makes ancient good uncouth. They must upward still and onward. Who would keep abreast of truth? This is the hope of Christian faith. In good times and in times of crisis, times like we are in right now, we are people committed to truth, the truth of Jesus Christ. We are people of the resurrection. We are people who believe that truth ultimately triumphs and that this same truth calls us to change our habits and our behavior. It calls us to value the lives of others as much as we value our own. We embody the words of the apostle when he wrote, "Rejoice in the Lord. Again, I will say it, rejoice," and we rejoice even now. And our lives reflect his prescription during these times of crisis. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, If there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep doing them, and the God of peace will be with you. Whatever is true, think about these things and keep doing them. I was touched this week by the words of Steve Charleston, a retired Episcopal bishop and a Native American. He wrote this: "Now is the time for which our faith has prepared us. Now is the moment when all that we believe can be put to work. Now we can turn to the inner resources that we have been developing over these many years to face the challenge of a world in desperate need. We are not afraid of this crisis, for we have been made ready for it. We have devoted our lives to the belief that something greater than fear or disease guides human history. We have studied, prayed, and grown in the Spirit. Now we come to the call to use what we believe. Our people need hope, confidence, courage, and compassion, the very things for which we have been trained. We are the calm in the midst of the storm. Stand your ground and let your light so shine that others may see it and find their faith as well." My Christian friends, in the midst of this crisis, own your fears, but do not dwell there. Do not be afraid. Do not react from fear. Know that the truth will out. This is the good news. Amen.